Welcome to Full and Share Theology. We're your hosts, Justin Mercier and Bruce Pagano, and this is Theology for Everyone. Welcome back to Full and Share Theology. We're your hosts, Justin Mercier and Bruce Pagano.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, and we are not in person on video again, but we're in person together.
Right.
Yeah, I'm in town, and I was like, hey, let's do a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, we were supposed to record. So this is coming, like, when you are hearing this, we're recording it the day after midterm elections.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're hearing it, it was yesterday.
Got it, yeah, right.
Right.
And we know that, like, I think Crapo won, and
all the Republicans won in Idaho.
I know. I voted for Ammon Bundy, but, like,
good for you. You and, like, 18% of other, or 12% or something like that.
I think it was 17. Maybe it was 17. Yeah. So, take that, people.
Yeah.
Ammon Bundy. Actually, he still came in, like, third.
You can't joke about that, though.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, he came in third out of four, and four was the non-candidate. You know what I'm saying? Like,
like, fourth place got zero. Yeah, like, yeah.
I saw someone. Have you been seeing those around the valley that don't vote the big QR code?
I think so. Yeah.
Those are Ammon Bundy's little ploy to, like, get you to scan the code and goes to a website. And it's like, don't vote if you're going to be essentially dumb.
Okay.
And then he, like, presents all his little cases, you know, like, positions on stuff that make you not dumb if you agree with him.
Yeah.
But somebody, like, sprayed out the not part, and was like, do vote, and then, like, put a line in the QR code so you can't scan it.
Oh, dang.
Like, so I was just like, perfect.
Take that. Yeah. So as far as we know, you know, it's the same old white guys who run the state. Yeah. Nothing's gonna change.
Yep.
So
hey, it ain't Ammon Bundy and it ain't McGeechin.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I don't even know who McGeechin is.
She was a lieutenant governor that when, like, he would step out of the state, she'd enact some executive order like a mad woman.
Yeah, right. Actually, I do remember that now.
Yeah, like,
and it was like, wait, what?
Get back in line. Do your job. That's not your job.
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous. Like, yeah, that's who I want governor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyway.
You know, everyone is blaming everybody, you know, as far as, like, the country goes, you know, like, Republicans are like, oh, man, it's stolen.
Yeah, and part of today's conversation is based on the idea that, like, there's already election deniers. Before counts are like, it looks like I'm going to lose, there's been fraud. And it's just like, oh, come on, man. And it's in those states that they've, like, encouraged poll watchers to go sit and watch, which, by the way, like, I watched a video where, like, they were interviewing Oath Keepers, which is a terrorist group.
Is that still going? Okay, there you go.
Anyway, like, I was watching it, and it was an interview with the Oath Keepers, who are a terrorist group. I guess, like, largely made up of, like, prior military and, like, prior. And the interview, they were just like, oh, voting needs to happen in person on the day of election. And I'm just like, look, you idiots.
Yeah.
You guys are military. And, like, that means that you and about 3 million of your friends.
Yeah.
Most of which vote absentee ballot and by mail.
Yeah.
Because they don't live in the state that they're from, or they're overseas in a different country. So effectively what you're saying is none of them get to vote.
Yeah, right.
None of them get to vote. Like, your quote unquote brothers and sisters in arms who you supposedly support, don't get to vote because you're not smart.
Yeah, right.
In the way that you position yourself. But okay. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not going to call you dumb, but you're not smart. Like, the things you're saying don't make sense.
Yeah.
So,
it is
whatever.
It is very interesting. Like, there's almost this, like, this weird, there really is kind of a weird cult following to this whole thing. Like, I just noticed that, like, and maybe it's just a demographic thing, but, like, when I get with, like, an older white man, typically has a beard, like, you know, and that sort of thing in Idaho, and you just go, like,
and it's other places too, Arizona, but
it's just like the moment they start talking about politics, it's just a repeated thing that you're seeing.
They're all saying the same thing. Yeah. And it happens on the left too. Like, to be fair, it happens on the left too. My problem with it is, and this is where people like that challenge me on it can't understand. Like, they, not that they can't understand, they refuse to understand that the left isn't trying to make themselves like the party of God.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not trying to conflate themselves with Jesus and the party of God.
Totally.
The right is, to the point which you've made up your own Jesus. Totally. Like, and that's part of what we're going to talk about today is it's like you've created this scenario where there's only one way to be Christian when it comes to politics, not following Jesus. Like, it, like, because rarely do we ever hear talk about Jesus when we're talking about like right wing conservative, you know, biblical principles and values. Like, biblical values lets you pull anywhere from the Bible that fits your agenda versus Jesus centric values that are very specific in the way that he communicated things.
Yeah.
But if you did that, then you would pigeonhole yourself in some very serious ways.
Yeah.
And you couldn't be an ultra conservative MAGA cult. Right. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not saying that if you voted for Trump that you're in a cult, but there is a very, very specific fundamentalist sect within the MAGA crowd that is cult-like in their behavior. And we saw it perpetrated on January 6, 2021 in a violent act.
Yeah.
Like, we saw it like come to fruition at that point. So.
Yeah. So it was just a very interesting, like, it's just interesting the next day after this whole, like, the whole primaries and that sort of thing, how, like, I had heard the term, you know, red tsunami, it's coming, but, it, like, didn't come as, like...
Oh, the midterms, yeah.
Like, it wasn't as, like, you know, the tsunami that they had assumed it would be or something, you know? Right. Like, oh, the Republicans are gonna take over the House and the Senate, it's gonna be great.
And they may still take over the House, it's out, but, like, it doesn't... There's a real strong possibility they won't.
Yeah, right. So I just think it's really funny how, it's one of those things where, like, you're almost like, oh, we have this in the bag. And, like, that keeps happening, but then they don't have it in the bag. Right. Like, and it's just like, well, it was stolen, obviously. You know, you're like, come on, man.
Which I watched a Democrat candidate concede tonight. A video where he was just like, he's like, I'm not even joking.
Yeah.
This is my honor to concede tonight because it is what you do in this country when you take part of the democratic process and you lose. And maybe, you know, like the conservative side, the Republican side would be like, oh, he's just showboating to make us look bad, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You're like, he thinks he's proven a point, but he is proven a point.
Oh, totally.
Like, he's proven a point.
Yeah.
Like, he's proven a point. And you may not like the point, but he still proved the point.
Yeah, right.
He conceded. He's not going to come back and sue. He's not like, and it was, from what I understand, a close race.
Yeah.
But like, he lost, and so he conceded.
Yeah, right. What happens to politicians when they don't win?
Sometimes they'll keep their money? Sometimes they'll keep their seat. They, depending on how long that they've served, they keep it forever.
Like, they keep their salary?
They keep their salary forever.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I don't quote me. I'm not. But, like, I think it's 2 terms in the House, and you keep your salary forever, I think.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I was thought about it. I was always thought about, like, because you see these, like, these candidates, and, like, they're obviously uber wealthy. Like, they're super wealthy. But I'm like...
But some of them are lawyers. Some of them are, you know what I'm saying? So they just kind of go back to their life, probably.
Oh, I
see. Speaking tours, you know, like, maybe...
Yeah, books.
Books, you know, whatever. Like, I'm sure that they make money. That obviously, they weren't hurting for money before.
Right.
But if they get ousted and they've served a couple terms, I think they get to keep, I mean, I know that they do. I just don't know how many terms they have to serve.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's dependent on like what position you hold or.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So, but yeah, they'll keep it forever.
Oh, cool. Good for them.
No, I wish it is literally taxing our economy. Like, you shouldn't get to keep it forever. I mean, like, good for them, sure. But
there's just like thousands of people that we're just funding salaries for that don't do anything. I mean,
yes, but also they stay in Congress and the Senate for 40 years. So, like,
oh, I see.
You know, all those old people that are in the Senate have been in the Senate for
Yeah.
ever.
Yeah.
You know, Biden's been in, like,
Oh yeah,
politics in the Senate since like the '70s.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like
young videos of him is really interesting. I'm like, oh wow, that's him. Like, yeah. But yeah, I like with all the stuff that's coming, like the primaries, that sort of thing that was going through. You know, yesterday
midterms.
Sorry. Right. All these algorithms on my Instagram started popping up, and they're like, "Do you know that what's going to happen is this? This is my prediction. Nancy Pelosi is not going to win. And so then what's going to happen is this person is going to take over. And then Kamala Harris is going to fall sick all of a sudden. And then this guy's going to take over as president." You know, like, and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of things that have to happen. Right. You know, yeah. Like, so I don't know why I'm getting all the conspiracy
McCarthy,
theories.
I think it was McCarthy is the minority leader.
Yeah.
In the House.
Yeah. I think that's what you're talking about. Yeah.
And he, if they take the Senate, he'll be the majority leader.
Yeah, right.
And he'll be third in line because Nancy Pelosi's third in line. That's, you know, the speaker, the majority speaker of the House, is the next in line for president after the vice president.
Yeah. So that's a dicey situation then when they do State of the Unions then. Because you've got the president, vice president, and the speaker of the House all in that same room. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Yep. Yep. It is.
It's like, wow, they must have some extra security at that point.
And balls.
Oh, yeah. Now with all the insurrection stuff, it's like, maybe let's do this via Zoom. Can we do this via Zoom, everybody?
Let's not do this from a publicly disclosed location.
Exactly.
What are we drinking tonight? Do you remember?
Yeah. So this is a special treat for me. So it's called.
So.
Yeah.
This is like our mid, we should probably mention, this is our mid-season wrap up. We're going to take the next 6 weeks off-ish.
Cool.
We'll come back after the new year. That way we can just like not stress about like trying to get an episode out in the midst of what's supposed to be an enjoyable but is inevitably stressful season.
Sure.
But so we're celebrating with a Blood Oath Pact 8 bourbon.
Yeah.
It's a triple rye blend bourbon.
Three ryes.
And do you remember how much I said that a 2 ounce serving would be at a bar?
You said like it's like $136.
Yeah.
Jeez.
For 2 ounces. Like, so it's like a $68 ounce. So we're drinking each a $68 taste
of
bourbon. Have you tasted it yet?
No.
Taste it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will taste it.
This is.
I'll just chug it?
No.
I'm just joking.
Oh,
just
my
joking.
God.
I usually just seen your face. It was good.
Jerk.
Yeah. So I'm going to do it the right way where you have your mouth open. And,
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And bourbon you can chew. You're allowed to chew.
Yeah.
Bourbon,
the
right?
Kentucky Chew, you know? Oh, yeah.
And keep in mind, it's a rye. Wow. It's a rye.
That's really good. Oh, that is really good. There's a little bit of a, like a...
There's a bite spice. To it, a spice to it, but it's super smooth.
Yeah. Mm.
By far, like I've had probably one other more expensive whiskey once ever before, but this is probably the most expensive whiskey I've ever drank.
It's really good. It's so I'd say that's definitely more of like a... Like a deep oak,
like a
flavor.
Tawny,
like a
the color or the flavor,
yeah, color, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Like a tawny,
It looks like the legs of the of air semi slow. Like I don't see them.
It's got a nice long finish in the back.
Yeah,
like I can still feel, and not like the gasoline feel that you get with whiskey just in general, but I can still like breathe out the spices.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of my palate wheel. It's really good, though. There's a sweetness to it.
Mm-hmm. What's
and,
up?
Yeah, it's very good.
Is the kitty bugging you? That's my daughter.
Oh, yeah, okay. That kitty.
Kitty, put him in the laundry room, baby.
Yeah, I like cats. Cats are actually. No. I was
he's just being, like, he sits outside her door and meows.
Oh, yeah,
she's trying to go to bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our cats did that and then learned how to open the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we started having to put.
I have a
chair.
A lot of different problems with the fact that your cat figured out how to open the door.
Seriously, it was amazing. Like,
oh, but you had the
like
the handle latches, right? Not the doorknob.
Yeah. And the way that I found out, as this is funny, is the way I found out that they learned how to do that is I put them. So we only paid for one cat, but we had two cats. We didn't want to pay the extra deposit.
Right.
So we just only had one cat. So every time
that you line hedonist.
Yeah, for sure. And so every time that the landlords would come over, we would put them into our closet and like just because they wouldn't go in our closet to do an inspection. They would just kind of look around. And so we would put them in our closet. And then one day I was like, oh, I forgot to put one of the cats in there. So I threw him in the closet, closed the door, was doing something. And I was like, oh, crap, I forgot. Like, wait, didn't I put him in the closet? And I put him back in. And about the third time that this cat got out, the cats got out, I was like, what is going on here? And then like, so I put them back in the closet and I waited and I realized that he learned how to open the door. So
yeah. That's fun.
Yeah. It just kind of ruined it from there. But yeah.
Bastards.
I know. Well, it's funny. It's funny how like pastors talk about how horrible cats are all the time. What is that? I don't know.
They teach two things in seminary.
Oh, really?
That cats are evil and you need to hate them. And how to give a football analogy during a sermon.
Oh, gosh.
That's the two things they teach in seminary.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact because I went.
Right. Yeah, you have a degree.
So I know how to use football.
Oh, yeah.
In an analogy to make a point about the gospel.
But you won't watch football.
It's not that I won't watch it. It's just I'm disinterested.
Yeah.
But I also, on stage, will present as cat hating.
Is that right?
Yeah, but it's just a lie.
Oh, I see.
We have a cat, and I like him. I like messing with him.
Yeah.
He is an evil little jerk sometimes, though.
Oh, for sure.
But he's also kind of a sweetheart, too. Like, he's Hazel's cat, and he just loves her. And
yeah.
So.
Yeah, I miss our cats. Our cats are over at my sister-in-law's house right now while we're waiting to get another place someday. So, but.
Maybe soon.
I hope so. That would be really cool. I would like to. God's got to, and I'm hoping for it, but God's just got to show up in some really big ways. He has before. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Cool.
So
thank
good
you for sharing this.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm going to be sipping it like throughout the episode because it's really good. Yeah. It's pretty amazing here. Yeah.
Yeah, I dig it.
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite. I like me and my wife will buy one bottle a year. Or, like, every so often we'll buy a bottle of it. So, like, the last one we bought was pack 5.
Okay.
And that was a rum barrel finished bourbon. Mm. Super good. You can, like, it tastes like coconut.
Wow.
And we got this one. I don't know why I didn't realize that it was rye, and we tasted it. And she was just like, I don't like that. And I was like, I spent $300 on them.
Yeah, right.
What do you mean you didn't like it?
Yeah.
And she was just like, I was like, oh, it's rye. And she was like, yeah, I don't like it. And so I was like, she's like, you can share it with people. And I was like, nice. Oh, cool. Okay.
Nice. Sweet. Well, thank you. This is, special for sure.
So, and then we got Woodford.
Yeah.
Since we only got an ounce. So.
Yeah, cool. Did I tell you? I don't know if I told you in the last. And I did a powerlifting competition recently.
Like yeah, the charity thing.
Yeah. Someone brought a bottle of that, and before all of our lifts, we were taking shots out of the bottle.
Oh my god!
Like no glasses, no nothing. Literally passed it around. Like think about COVID, right?
Right.
Passed it to probably 7 people.
It's alcohol.
Yeah.
It, like, sanitize it, right?
I guess so, because we were literally, I drink it out of the bottle, hand it, they drink it out of the bottle, hand it, and we did that probably 6 times, and then we all chuck on a beer at the very end.
I'm a little frustrated that you bottle shot Woodford and not Jack Daniels.
No, but it was the birthday boy it was his birthday also. He's the one who brought it.
It just seems really cavalier to be doing that with Woodford and Jim Beam or Jack Daniels.
I was like, Woodford? He's like, it's my favorite. And I'm like, and we're going to drink tonight? He's like, heck yeah, we are, before every lift. And like,
okay.
It really helped with the lift.
Yeah. Yeah. By the end, it's just like, I don't even care.
My hands are ripped to shreds, but I'm good. You know, like.
That's funny.
But yeah, it was really fun. We just passed that around and drank. It was really fun. It was really good.
We should have an episode where every time one of us rants or every time I rant.
Oh, there you go.
We take a shot.
There you go. Yes.
We'll be wasted by the end.
Yeah, that'd be great. Let's do it. That'd be fun.
So,
yeah.
We're talking about.
Yeah. we're talking about. Yeah.
Christian violence.
So, yeah.
No, the case for Christian violence.
Yeah. So, one of the things that we've kind of, well, and it really was from a, like, I don't know. I know you had a post. You had a post online. And then there was people who were upset about it. But we kind of worked through this whole idea of, like, because, so, you know, when we talk about the insurrection, that sort of thing, is, and actually Biden, we've said it before, but Biden just said it, like, probably, what, a few months ago, where he was like, how can you say blue lives matter, we back the blue, but then you're killing police officers at the Metro?
Right, and I've actually had friends in the military argue that they didn't kill the cops at the Capitol, like, no. Like, no. Brian Sicknick died from his injuries that he sustained there.
Right.
And his autopsy, they could not conclusively say that he had an underlying condition that caused his death. No. They were like, look, he did die from this thing, but he sustained injuries that were contributory. So, you can argue it all you want.
Yeah.
There were cops that were injured and that were hurt and that died. And then other cops that, because of the trauma they experienced, committed suicide. Like, they killed themselves because, and I'm sorry, I should have, like, content warning that or trigger warning that. But like, there were cops that couldn't handle the trauma of it. And that was the way that they dealt with it. And so they died by suicide. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, a direct result of that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's part of the...
Well, then there was even that lady who testified during the hearings that they were doing and that sort of thing, the committee or whatever. Yeah. And she had, like, a brain injury for life for it. Like, and because she was right at the front, like, the very beginning, and got blasted. And then she went and helped out where, like, the and main then, doors
and,
were.
Yeah, and then that cop who got a brain injury, lost consciousness, got hit in the head multiple times, and has had to quit. Like, so don't tell me. Like,
I mean, that lady who testified, like, I was really moved by her. Her talk, because she was like, I didn't understand why American citizens who said that they loved our country, why they were fighting us and why they were hurting us and, like, why they were spraying pepper spray on us and, like, spitting on us and punching us. Like, I couldn't figure out what the heck was going on, you know, like, but all I know is, like, my job was to protect the, you know, the Capitol. And that's why I was, but these people are saying that they love America and all that kind of stuff. But, like, how could you love America, but you're, like, trying to, like, hang Pence, you know, like.
Right.
So it was just, like, very interesting. So that's the whole thing is, like, it's funny how when you say two Christians, you know, who are in this Trump, you know, kind of campaign, when you flat out ask them, you know, will you condone the January 6th, like, insurrection? Like, will you condone it, or will you say that was wrong?
Right.
And they won't. Like, they'll just be like, oh, well, you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do, you know, or, like, you know, God, you know, the Bible says, you know, turn the other cheek. Well, you know what? We're done turning the other cheek. You know, we're ready to start standing up and defending ourselves, you know, because that's what the Bible teaches us to do. And,
and who was it? Which Trump Jr., I think, was on stage. It was just like, that turn the other cheek thing worked for Jesus, but, like, it hasn't worked for us. And it's time to take a different tactic. And this is like to a room full of, like, to Turning Point Faith.
Yeah.
So it's a room full of Christian leaders where he's just like, well,
yeah,
we tried Jesus' way.
Yeah, right.
Now let's try a different way.
You know, how many times in the Bible, especially the Old Testament, when they were doing it God's way and then they thought, yeah, we're just going to do it our own way. How well did that work out?
It always perfect. It never went poorly. It never went. Yeah. There's not a time in the Bible, Old Testament or New, where they did not like the thing that God wanted yeah. and then did something different and it worked and it didn't work out. Like it always worked out.
Yeah, yeah.
Thriving kingdom.
Yeah.
Never taken over by anybody else. Never went into exile.
The Lord's temper was never kindled.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's just
Haven't you been to Israel to the temple that was never destroyed?
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, yeah. You really have to like look at it at an angle.
From a hill down angle. Yeah. At sunset so that the light's not hitting it exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just like I just don't understand that mentality. I don't understand the mentality of like
it's present.
That's all right. I just don't understand the mentality of like we're just gonna do it our way. Like we're just gonna do, you know, we're done being victims. You know, that's the whole thing, right? Is we're not gonna be victims anymore. We're gonna be victors. And what that looks like is we're gonna take over the Capitol and it's gonna be a red tsunami around the whole country. And it's like, and then when it isn't, instead of being like, oh, maybe we're wrong.
Try harder.
Yeah. They're like, that was stolen, you know, like the voting machines were broken. Right. Like, and I'm like, dang. I'm like, 5-year-olds do that. Like, you know, 10-year-olds do that when you're like, oh, it wasn't my fault. Like the thing just broke, you know, like you're like, no, you threw it out the window. What was supposed to fly? You know, like,
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's what kids do. Why are these grown people, why are they doing the same thing? You know, so the whole thing is like when they're all like, there's a case for violence. I looked up this article about the case for violence, right?
Right.
I think one thing that I read was,
and so before you get into just like just the idea that like, so that's what prompted this discussion. Is just like we just had the midterms. There's already like accusations that like maybe things weren't on the up and up. There were already accusations before, like they were straight up saying, if we don't win, then we're going to cry foul. Like, like candidates were saying, good news. I think almost every single person that was running for governor that was an election denier was ousted, like did not get voted for.
Oh, wow.
Not every single one, I don't think, but almost every single one that was like an out and out election denier. But like I was having this, so, you know, I had some stuff I posted that frustrated and made people mad, surprise. And today I just had this idea that like, or this thought, and I was listening to something. And I was just like, man, political violence, like there's this increase in the ultra conservative Christian circles of understanding, like even after January 6th, I heard multiple people close to me in conversation with me, a family member that was really close to me, made comments that were like, yeah, but we can understand why they would turn to violence because they were just trying to get back what they lost. And I've mentioned it before, but I'm just like, what'd they lose? Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah, like they lost an election. They didn't, nothing was taken from them. They literally lost. And actually the comment was like, they're just trying to get back what was taken from them. Yeah. And that was the, like, nothing was taken from them.
Yeah, right.
And so I just had this increasing over the last couple of years, this increase in like the Christian, you know, conservative, ultra conservative, Christian fundamentalist, Christian nationalist, MAGA, justification for violence that's just like there is a time for violence. You know, just even the idea that like we elected a bully who would beat up the bully on the playground, like our bully is a bigger, you know, is stronger and will punch the Democrats who are bullies. And just that idea, and then like the don't turn the other cheek rhetoric, and like there's all, you know, there's a case to be made for violence, Christian violence, the use of political violence by Christians. Yeah. And so I tweeted today, or I Instagrammed or like posted today, this thing that was just like, look, here's the deal. I think I said, if you're a Christian and you can find a way to condone political violence, then I'm confident in I feel confident being able to say that we do not follow the same Jesus. And what I mean by that is, you made up your own Jesus.
Totally.
We are not following the same Jesus. You made him up.
Yeah.
The one that you're following, you made up. And so I just thought, like, man, maybe it's worth the conversation to have this discussion. And you kind of prompted it when you got here. It was just like, let's have a discussion about whether or not there is a case for Christian violence.
Right. Yeah. So this article, the literal title was "A Case for Christian Violence." I won't read the whole article, but I just thought that this section was really interesting here. I'll just read it here. It says, though Jesus taught a nonviolent response in some situations, in others, he warns us to be armed and prepared. In a statement that obviously applies to a wider audience than just the disciples who were present when he said it, Jesus declared, let the one who has no sword sell his cloak and buy one. And it says the Greek word for weapon that Jesus encouraged possession of is pronounced makairan, which was a short sword commonly carried by travelers in the first century for personal protection from bandits or wild beasts. The equivalent, this is what I find really interesting.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a little sword, like a little knife.
Probably bigger than a knife. Probably like,
yeah,
you know, like the crocodile and the knife. That's not a knife. This is a knife.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like this big Bowie knife. So like, yeah, maybe a little bit bigger than that. Like a small, like machete.
Yeah. And so he's saying, yeah, there's a case for a small machete and it says specifically from bandits or wild beasts.
Right.
Okay. Keep that in mind. He says the equivalent weapon in our time would be a handgun, or when an attack is likely or even inevitable, perhaps maybe a battle rifle such as an AR-15.
Yep, there it is.
And I'm like, what?
Yep, you just equated a small machete-sized sword with a battle rifle. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Such as an AR-15. Those are exactly the same thing.
Yeah, right.
And a modern day translation of a sword is an AR-15.
Yeah, and I'm just like, wow, that's got to be such a stretch. And like, it makes me really like frustrated that like they would be like, you know what, God, you know, it's in the Bible. AR-15s are in the Bible. See, like, you know, like, it's the equivalent to a small sword on your hip. You know, it's like, no. Like, this is an automatic rifle that will shoot, what, hundreds of rounds?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Instantly?
Not instantly, but I mean, like, as fast as you can pull the trigger.
Yeah.
You can put a bullet downrange.
Yeah. And I'm just like, you know, for me, like, I would say it would be more translated into, like, the musket, you know? Like, you put the ball in, you put the powder in, you shove it down with the cloth, you put the thing.
Or, and, you know, a knife.
Yeah, or just, like, a knife.
Or,
yeah,
like, you know, a machete.
Yeah.
Would be the equivalent, because they still exist.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Walmart,
like,
has them.
Like, if, yeah, you want to make that comparison to, like, a projectile type thing, do a bow and arrow, but even still, like, bow and arrow still exist. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
The truth is that there was no equivalent to the AR-15 back during Jesus's time.
Yeah, no. Yeah. No.
There just wasn't. There wasn't anything in the history of the world that could do that much damage that quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with that precision. Like, with that much precision. And that's not to say that, like, medieval battles weren't gruesome. But there's a reason why they lined up and shot at each other with muskets.
Yeah, right.
Because it was, one, culturally, like, it was, you know, the gentleman's way to do it. Yeah. I guess, if you're going to shoot each other, line up. Yeah. But two, like, if they spread out, they couldn't shoot each other.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Have, like, you ever shot a musket before?
Once.
I have. I actually won a competition with it, but highly unreliable,
right,
when you're trying to point at something.
Right.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, the revolutionaries started hiding and like using like native indigenous people's tactics.
Yeah, right.
Is the thing like shooting like generals and commanders on horses and stuff is the reason they won? Because they couldn't find them. You know why? Because they couldn't, like, they, one, they were hiding and they weren't used to it. But two, they didn't have snipers. They didn't have precision weapons.
Right. And do you think that's probably why it's been so long since the, like, next world war, as far as American history? Because it seemed like there was a lot of, like, fighting happening, but then it just, something happened, like, well, technology that, just happened.
I think that the nuclear age ushered in, like, mutually assured destruction. If you launch a nuke, we'll launch a nuke.
Yeah.
And so that, like, that mutually assured destruction tempered that. I mean, like, just even the treaties that we entered into with like NATO and Russia and like all these, when I was in the military, even in, you know, 2013, you know, 2011, when I was working in the nuclear missile field, or while working in the nuclear missile squadron, I don't want to make it sound like I worked in the field. I think I had like two tours in the field before life circumstances dictated that I not go to the field.
But we
would still get Russians as part of the START treaty, which is a strategic arms reduction treaty. But we would still get Russians that would, like, literally they would just get in a plane and start flying toward America, and they'd be like, hey, we're flying in to do a START inspection. And until they were landing, you didn't know that they were coming to your site. So, like, we just knew that they were entering America, and we're in Wyoming, and we're just like, crap, they could be coming to look at any one of our nuclear weapon sites. And then we'd be scrambling, getting ready for it, like getting an escort team. Like, and then all of a sudden they'd be like, oh, we're going to North Dakota. And we were like, oh, okay. And they could just come, and we'd have to open up a nuke. They'd have to see, like, yep, there's a nuke in this hole that you said there's a nuke. Or they'd go to a site and they'd be like, open it up. Yep, you said there were no nukes in the site, and there's no nuke in the site, and then they'd leave.
Wow, jeez.
That's part of why. Like,
yeah.
But I'm also probably, like, I don't think that, yes, we haven't had world wars, but we've been in continuous conflict since World War II, you know, whether actively or inactively. I mean, I mean, all the stuff connected to the Cold War, the CIA, the Bay of Pigs, and, you know, Beirut, and, like, the Middle East, and we were still actively engaged in warfare, even if it was covert. Anyway, that's tangent. Gets off. But the point being, like, this guy's making a point that he's using Luke 22, where Jesus tells them to buy swords, as a means of validating the use of violence, right? And weapon ownership. And let me be clear, this isn't about weapon ownership. I have my own opinions about whether or not you own guns and what the Second Amendment is. I don't care about that. It doesn't matter. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the Christian case for violence. Is there a Christian case for violence? And I would contend there's absolutely zero way to interpret anything Jesus does from a violent lens. Like, from a lens that justifies violence. It's impossible. I don't think that it's possible at all. And we can talk about, like, Augustine's just war theory, that sometimes for the moral good to prevail, that there is a form of war that becomes a just means of enacting a moral good. But even still, it's a last resort. It's never a first resort. And I know there are some, like, conservative Christians that would be like, oh, but we are at a last resort. This is the last resort. And so we're turning to violence. But I would argue, like, is it? Like, part of why our governmental system seems to be faltering is because of all of the, like, preemptive, oh, if I don't win, you know, the five-year-old thing that you were talking about was like, you just don't like the results.
If I don't win, I'm gonna throw a fit.
There were, like, over six, like, weren't there, like, over 60 court cases after the 2020 election, none of which were found to be true. And many of them, headed by conservative judges.
Oh, even in part of the instruction like stuff, like the what's it called?
The hearings.
I mean, even like, yeah, that's good. Even like, what'd they say? Trump had even told his staff, like, get the governor of Georgia on the phone and tell him that unless he says it was stolen, that, you know, there's gonna be consequences for him, you know, things like that, you know, like, and he was trying to like get these governors on the phone that he thought he had these like cahoots with
control over.
Yeah. And they're just like, no, like they're still gonna count the electoral votes and we're not changing our electoral votes. Like,
right.
But you have the ability to change them. And like, no, we're not going to. Yeah. Like, this is an election, you know, and it's like so interesting that like he had to go that length to like try to do it.
All these court cases, all these lawsuits, none of it found, and still there are people like, oh, well, I don't know about it. Like, come on, like you don't have to agree, but just concede it. Just be like, fine, it is what it is.
Yeah,
but we're not at a last resort. Our government system is functioning the way that it's supposed to, and as messed up as it's always been. You know, like it. Is there room to improve it? Absolutely. Is the Electoral College garbage? Probably.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we're not at a last resort. So even your just war theory, one, not meant for that. That's not what that's meant for.
Right.
But two, you're trying to figure out like that thing when we were talking about the American readout, you found that thing where the guy was just like the biblical
basis for war.
Yeah. The biblical basis for war.
Yeah.
And like establishes this whole thing. And so let's talk about Luke 22. Yeah. Like, Jesus is making this point where in Isaiah, it says that he's counted among the rebels, right? Like there's this prophetic voice that says the Messiah is counted among the rebels. And so Jesus says, hey, sell your coat, go buy a couple knives. They're like, hey, we have these ones. He's like, that's enough.
Right. Yeah.
And there's some dispute as to whether or not he's saying like, that's enough to do what we need to do with, or okay, that'll make the point. Like, that's enough. We don't need any more. But regardless, he's making the point that, no, two swords is enough to do what we have to do. Yeah. And the dispute is over. Part of the dispute is over, what does that mean? Like, what do we have to do? And then we see it in the very next setting where they're in the garden. He's praying with them. They come up to arrest him. Legions. Like it would have been like 1,000 soldiers. In one teaching that I heard, that it wasn't just a couple guys under the darkness of night, like the temple priest and like a couple of scribes and some Roman, you know, a couple of Roman centurions. They were just like, come with us, Jesus.
Yeah.
And there were six dudes there. It was like 1,000 people. Jeez. That would have went, because they would have thought he was a rebel. That was the thing. He has an army to back him. We see the multitudes of people that he gathers there with him, defending him.
Yeah.
And so they show up there.
Yeah.
And what is the first thing that happens?
Yeah, Peter.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter steps out in front of him and chops off this dude's ear.
Yeah, right.
And Jesus, what does Jesus do? Get him!
Yeah, right.
No. He's like, Peter, stop it. Put that away.
Yeah.
It is not supposed to be like this.
Yeah.
And then he heals this dude's ear.
Yeah. Right.
And then he goes quietly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but Bruce, there's political violence in the Bible. Yep, there is. Not for you though.
Right.
It's not political violence that dictates how you're supposed to act. And if we want to be honest, the number one act of political violence is actually Jesus being crucified.
Yeah, right.
The cross was a political statement.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not.
Right.
It was a torture execution device that was used to make a point about zealots, rebels, and rabble rousers.
Right. Yeah.
And so they're making this point with Jesus on the cross that this is what happens to people who like buck the system.
Yeah.
And did Jesus fight it?
Mm-mm.
No, scripture says he went quiet like a lamb to the slaughter.
Yeah, right.
Right. So he accepts it.
Right. Right.
So facing political violence, Jesus doesn't backlash.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, which is so interesting. Like, and that really puts it in perspective is like, man, like, you lost the election. Okay. Like, you're going to, like, what? Like, you still have influence. Like, you know, you still see Obama speaking at things in like, endorsing right. people and that sort of thing. He can help other, you know, Democratic candidates.
Yeah, but they would say, yeah, but he's not impacting the economy. He's not impacting laws that stop abortion. And he,
yeah, but I mean, but if Trump were to be like, yeah, I lost the election, but now what I'm going to do is start speaking on behalf of these other conservatives, I'm going to back them. So if I back them, just know that you can trust them, right? That's kind of like what they do. Like, I feel like they would still be like, they would be like, oh, okay, he accepted that he lost, and but like now let's try to get another conservative in the office, you know, like. But it's just so funny about the temper tantrum that had to be thrown, right. And then in turn, it feels like it really put a lot of people, like. Mature wise, just so down so many notches,
right?
Like, and I'm like,
whoa. And you know, to be fair, Trump did speak at a lot of rallies and whatnot.
Yeah,
he's posturing for himself. But also, like, he made fun of, like, did you hear him make fun of Ron DeSantis?
Yeah,
call him Ron DeSanctimonious.
I don't understand. Maybe you can help me understand it, because I know that, like, Tim was like, "Are you kidding me?" Like, when he said that. But what was the meaning behind it? Like,
he's saying that that Ron DeSantis is sanctimonious and thinks that he's all that, and like, he's ridiculous because there's a rumor that DeSantis wants to run for 2024, and if that's the case, if he wants the Republican.
Oh, I see.
Nomination, who's he going up against? Potentially Trump.
Yeah.
And so what does Trump do when it comes to all of his Republican constituents that are seeking to be the nominee?
Yeah.
He trashes them. Right. Like, he makes fun of Rubio, and he makes fun of Ted Cruz, and he makes fun of all these people, calls them names, right. makes fun of them. And so he's just posturing. Again, he's posturing. He's setting himself up And most of the time, his followers are like, yeah, Sleepy Joe, yeah, Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
Makes fun of him. And then they fall in line behind him.
Right. Right. I've never seen so much, like, I've just never seen so much disrespect to a president ever. Like, with all the, let's go Brandon, F. Right. Joe, and the, you know what, and like.
Oh, I saw a lot of disrespect towards Trump.
Oh, really?
I mean, just from the like, liberal comedians and, like.
Oh, I see.
But I didn't see it happening on the House floor.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like.
Right.
I didn't see them calling them names. And
yeah. Just, it's really just interesting, like, how it's like.
And I definitely didn't see Biden flags.
Yeah, right.
And F Donald Trump. And,
right.
Like, I didn't see those.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just, and so, I think that's what you're talking about, right?
It's just so interesting. I've never seen that before. I've seen, like, people be like, oh, you know, Obama ruined this country.
Oh,
they'll say that. But
and,
like,
and to be fair, I could not stand Trump's character. Like, he's not a good person.
No.
And there's no fruit. Like, any fruit he produces is rotten fruit.
Right.
It's not good. He's not a good person. Yes, he's an image bearer. Not a good person still.
Right.
The fruit of his character is rotten and sour. And that doesn't mean that I don't have things that I can't work on. It doesn't mean that nobody else has things that they can't work on or that they should be working on. But I was in the military for 20 years, and I hold a lot, like, I hold the office of the president in high esteem, and I respect that office. And he made what I think, from my opinion, he made a mockery of that office. And that's frustrating to me. That makes me angry.
Right.
I did not go around calling him names.
Right.
I also didn't go around with my truck with an F Trump flag.
Right.
I didn't. You know why? Because Biden's not my idol. Like, Biden's not, I'm not all in on Biden. I'm not all in on Hillary. I'm not all in on Marco Rubio. I'm not all in on DeSantis. I'm not all in on Beto, you know, Beto.
Yeah.
I'm not all in on Brad Little. I'm not in on Stephen Haidt. I'm not all in on these guys. Right. And so I can look at them and be like, I don't know, should Biden be the president? Probably not. I don't know if he's cognitively present enough most of the time to be the president.
Why not go back to old times where, like, they're like, we're going to crown you as king. And they're like, but I don't want it. And they're like, that's why we have to give it to you.
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah. Like, why don't we make America great again and go back to the.
Yeah, right. Go back to, you know.
Or at least go like, hey, you're going to run against each other. And the loser's the vice president.
Yeah, which they did, obviously.
They did for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was just like, oh, you're going to run against someone of the opposite party. And then when you lose,
yeah,
you'll be the vice president.
Right.
Okay.
I think it's really interesting. That's kind of cool.
You don't get to pick your running mate.
Yeah, right.
Now, with the way that things are today, the vice president's people would probably just try and assassinate the president so that their guy could be, you know what I'm saying? But,
They're like, so we haven't had a good assassination for a while.
Yeah. I'm sure it doesn't, you know, it comes with its problems, but at the end of the day, like, stop it. Like, give you both participation trophies. Fine. You're the president, you're the vice president. Like, oh, you don't like that? Oh, okay.
Honestly, they can, like, presidents don't even make that much money.
$400,000 a year.
Honestly, like, these.
He gave up these... that Trump gave up his pay.
Yeah, why?
To prove the point, I don't need the money.
But
man was draining the swamp.
Yeah.
You know? So that's Luke 22. Luke 22 is not permission for you to own a weapon. And it's not even Jesus saying that violence is permissible. Like he actually stops the violence. We actually heard someone teach one time that in that moment, Jesus let Peter down. And this is like, no, Jesus, Jesus knew the plan. Peter stepped out in front of him to enact his own plan, and Jesus had to shut that crap down. It was just like, that's not how we're doing this. Stop it. Right. And then he fixed the issue, right? Which is...
I wonder how that was, by the way. Like, you know, every time they ever tell that story in, like, the...
Hey, Peter.
Yeah.
Remember when you cut off that dude's ear, and Jesus was like, stop it, Peter.
Yeah. It's always, like, really interesting how, like, it's always like, Jesus, you need to come with me. And then it, like, cuts to, like, a sword swinging, and then the guy's like, like, you know, and I'm like, wait, these were Roman trained soldiers.
Well, no,
like,
that guy whose ear got cut off was this one of the scribes.
Oh, it's one of the scribes. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes more sense because I'm like,
it wasn't some Roman soldier.
I thought it was like a soldier. I was like, oh, dude, that's.
But to be fair, the Roman soldier stood there and was just like,
oh, dude,
that sucks.
You don't have no ear no more. Like, you know. But and then I just wonder in that moment, like Jesus walks over. I gotta imagine that there was like this moment of like where they start pulling out their swords and like the guy's like, hold on, and like this is Jesus. He's obviously healed other people, like, and then he like goes and like heals them. I'm sure the 1,000 people that were there were probably like, oh my gosh, a miracle! Like
oh my gosh, a miracle! Arrest that man!
But
that's the thing, like miracle, arrest him.
Yeah, right.
And then this is like. Peter and them fools run off. So Luke 22 is a poor scripture. Okay, but then in that article they bring up the Matthew verse, Matthew blah blah blah.
Yeah, I'll get it here. It's Matthew. Sorry, I think it's like Matthew 10. Matthew 10:16.
Yeah, where be wise as serpents. So Jesus says, the 12 disciples' instructions for service. Can you read? Do you have the Bible up?
Yeah, it just basically says.
No, I want you to read more than just that passage of scripture.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I can.
So starting in Matthew 10, read, because it's verse 10. So read starting in verse 1 and read down to verse 15.
All right, let's see here. Bible. And then, I'm right on Matthew. That's cool. Matthew 10. Okay. So let me start. Where do I want to start?
Verse 1.
Verse 1. Okay.
Baby.
So it says, the prayer was no sooner prayed than it was answered. Jesus called 12 of his followers and sent them to the ripe fields. He gave them power to kick out the evil spirits and tenderly care for the bruised and the hurt lives.
What version are you reading?
The Message.
Oh, okay. Can you read the actual Bible?
Yeah, yeah. Wait.
I love Eugene Peterson. He's my favorite.
Which one?
But like NASB or something.
Let's see. NASB.
Because I don't know what Eugene Peterson uses as contemporary language, and it's like commentary more than it is like direct translation.
All right, so Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them the authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every disease and every sickness. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these. First, Simon, who's called Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, the son of Zebedee, his brother John, Philip, and Bartholomew, Thomas, and Matthew, James, the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who also betrayed him. It says, these 12 Jesus sent out after instructing them, saying, do not go on the road to the Gentiles. Do not enter the city of the Samaritans, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven has come near. Heal the sick and raise the dead. Cleanse those with leprosy. Cast out demons. Freely you receive, freely give. Do not acquire gold or silver or copper for your money belts or a bag for your journey or even two tunics or sandals or a staff, for the worker is deserving of his own support. In whatever city or village you enter, inquire who is worthy of it and stay at the house until you leave that city. As you enter the house, give it your greeting. If the house is worthy, then see that your blessing of peace comes upon it. But if it is not worthy, take back your blessing of peace, and whoever does not receive nor listen to your words as you leave the house or city, shake off the dust of your feet. Truly, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah on that day of judgment than for that day. Behold,
for that city. Nope. Stop right there.
Okay.
For that city. So keep that in mind. We're not even to that passage of scripture yet, because that's next. Yeah. So that article that you were reading, A Case for Christian Violence, quotes the very next verse, which talks about being, I'm sorry, not the very next verse. Is it the very? Oh, yeah. About being wise like a serpent. This translation says wary as a serpent.
Yeah.
And gentle as a dove, right?
Right.
Or innocent as a dove, right? What was the context that they gave in that passage or in that article? Do you remember?
The context was that the context was be as like serpents and innocent and as doves. And what he said was, so this is what it's saying is, So essentially what he's saying is this, is that, behold, before being told to be as innocent as doves, we're first directed to be as wise as serpents. And for many poisonous snakes that I've encountered in my decades, not one of them went out of their way to harm me, but nearly all of them wisely demonstrated the willingness to do so if they were threatened by in any measure. Which is interesting, because any snakes I've ever come across, typically, like you said, they just go away.
Right, and we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. And then he basically just says, there is a sense of urgency in Jesus' emotion and that indicates conditions would arrive and the need for such a weapon would become critical, even to the point of selling the important garments necessary. And then it says, in terms of Jesus' attitude towards weapons, he is instructive to observe that the two disciples were carrying their swords. We kind of talked about that, that sort of thing.
Are you talking about the serpents and doves?
Yeah, so just interesting that what he's saying is serpents, you know, typically run away unless they're provoked, then
they'll strike.
Then they you know they could strike,
right?
And it's like interesting, like
because and so the so I'm gonna read the next passage of scripture. Yeah. It says, starting in verse 16. So remember, what was he just talking about?
Yeah, he's just talking about like they have authority to go help people, love people, heal people, that sort of thing.
If you get to a house and they're worthy, give them a blessing. If they're not, leave, shake your dust off your feet, right?
Yeah. Right. And essentially just continue to move in the next
So he's step. Talking about going out and spreading the good news, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's talking about like, here's your instructions for serving other people and giving right. them the good news
right.
and blessing them, right? Yeah. That's the context.
Yeah.
And then he says, behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be as wary as serpents and be as innocent as doves. But be on guard against people, for they will hand you over to the courts and flog you in their synagogues. And you will even be brought before governors and kings on my account as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they hand you over, do not worry about what, how or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who are speaking, but it is the Spirit of your Father who is speaking in you. Now brother will be betray brother to death, and father his child, and child will rise up against parents, and you will be hated by and cause them to be put to death, and you will be hated by all because of my name. But it is the one who has endured to the end who will be saved. But whenever they persecute you in one city, flee to the next.
Yeah.
For truly I say to you, you will not finish going through the cities of Israel until the Son of Man comes.
Yeah, right.
Okay? So he sets up this service.
Yeah.
In the first part of the first 15 verses, he sets up what it's going to look like for them to serve and to enter a city and to shake their feet, the dust off their feet of cities that don't accept them, and to give blessings to, and that they don't need stuff that to go in faith, right?
Right.
Right after that, he says, look, there are wolves out there.
Right.
Yeah. And a wise snake, or a, what's the word he uses in,
Yeah, he just says
a wary serpent.
Yeah.
An intelligent serpent is prudent, is aware of their own interests.
Yeah.
And to preserve their own interest, they flee. They go under a rock. So yes, a snake might provoke, but that's not their first instinct. Their first instinct is to avoid the danger,
right.
to leave.
Right.
Right. And so he's saying, be wary, be prudent of your own interest to spread the good news on my account.
Yeah.
And be aware that there are wolves among you that would devour you.
Yeah.
Avoid them.
Yeah. Right.
And be innocent. If they come and take you and flog you and take you before governors, don't worry about what you say. Maintain your innocence.
Yeah. Right.
Don't strike against them. Maintain your innocence as a dove.
Right.
That when you're given words, they'll be words from your Holy Spirit Father.
Right.
And on my account,
you'll
be upheld.
Right.
And when you come into your suffering and endure to the end, then you'll enter into my glory.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's still not about violence. In fact, if anything, it's like, maintain your innocence.
Yeah.
Through the wisdom of fleeing violence.
Yeah.
And that honors me.
Right.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
So, like, the ability to twist that into, like, yeah, but snakes strike too.
Yeah.
He didn't even get to that part.
Yeah, right.
He didn't even get to that part.
He wasn't worried about that.
Because he wasn't worried about that.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, like, the very first martyr we see, you know who the very first martyr is?
Or Jesus.
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
Stephen.
Yeah, yeah. Stone.
Right.
Yeah.
He's stone. Paul standing there holding the coats.
Yeah.
Right. Did Stephen pick up a stone and retaliate?
Mm-mm.
No. Nope. He didn't.
Right.
He knelt there, prayed to Jesus.
Right. Yeah.
Asked him to forgive the same way that, who did that?
Yeah, right.
Like, was being killed and was like, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Right.
It's on the tip of my tongue. It was somebody pretty important. But Stephen makes the same plea.
Yeah.
To Jesus, who he sees.
Right.
And Jesus is like, I'm going to receive you. I'm going to receive you today.
Yeah, right.
No retaliation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it'd be really hard to figure out how you can say, oh, violence was okay in this context.
Like, what about Paul? One of the most violent people.
Yeah.
Right? Before Jesus, like, went about, like, arresting and having Christians killed.
Yeah.
Never used violence again.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Went to Rome, stood before Caesar.
Yeah.
Was put to death.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, so it'd be, like I said, it's very hard to say, well, you know, Jesus was violent, you know. It's like, nope.
And at the end of the day, like, how do you account for the fact that Jesus, like, there were times that he was going to be stoned and he slipped out of town?
Yeah, right.
Was he a coward?
Yeah, right.
Like, was Jesus a coward?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no. No, but obviously very...
he didn't stand there and take it.
As a serpent.
Like, he knew what was happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And here's the thing, and we've said this before. Yeah. Jesus never taught anything he didn't do.
Right.
So when he's telling them, hey, be wary like a serpent, be prudent like a serpent, be wise like a serpent, also remain innocent as a dove, he did that. Like, he literally did that thing where he goes and they're like, we're going to stone him, throw him off a cliff.
Yeah.
And he just, like, whoop, like, slips out of town.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Slips out of the crowd.
He's evaded us again. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Wow.
So.
Yeah.
Silent lamb, like a silent lamb.
Yeah.
Headed to the slaughter.
Yeah.
But you're allowed to own an AR-15 and use it to make sure that your political agenda and Jesus, like, I don't know. I don't know if we end up in heaven all together. Like, if you're like that uber conservative, like, if you're the Christian that I was talking about today, that I was just like, I think you made up your own Jesus. I don't know if we make it into heaven together, and maybe we will. Like, I'm willing to concede the fact that we might, like, we might both be Christians. Your version of Jesus is like, well, you believed in me, you didn't follow my way, but I feel like he's gonna say that to me too, like, Bruce, you know, like, how well did you follow my way?
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to say, oh, I lusted. Hmm. Oh, I was really angry at my brother to the point where, like, it was borderline hate. Like, I'm going to have to say that.
Yeah.
And I got to believe, out of his grace and mercy and love, he's going to say, okay, I'm going to have to burn that off you.
Yeah.
And you're going to enter smelling like smoke. Hmm. But you get in.
Yeah.
He's going to say that to people because it's in the Bible.
Yeah, right.
And if, like, okay, maybe we all end up, but how much hell are you creating on earth in misinterpreting his way?
Right.
And that's the issue. Like, Jesus isn't just for this future heaven that you're hoping to make it to.
Right.
Literally, Jesus is for the condition of people's lives today.
Yeah.
And when you enact violence against them, you're literally creating hell.
Right.
And so there's just not a justification for it. That's the whole enemy love and turn. I saw this the other day. I'm reading a book. A More Christ-Like God by Brad Jerzak.
Yeah.
And he makes a point. I think it was that book. Anyway, he makes a point that, like, we're called, like, to these four types of love that embody God, embody Jesus, and thus God, to love each other, to love God, to love our neighbor, and to love our enemy. Like,
yeah.
That literally includes everyone. Like, in giving us those four dictations, or, well, that's the wrong word, but, like, in giving us those four directives, that's the word.
Yeah.
Commands, some might call them.
Yeah, right.
He's literally not leaving a gap for you to exclude people from being loved.
Right.
Which means
if
I think it's in the book of John that says love, or first, I'll have to remember. I think it's in, like, one of the Johns that says love does no harm to a neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's violence.
Right.
And so there's not room for violence. And that's the thing, is like, you might be able to find human justification for violence.
Yeah.
Oh, I was protecting my family. Okay. I'm not going to argue with you about that. We're talking about political violence to meet and exact your own political agenda.
Right.
There's not room for it. I would say there's not room for any violence.
Yeah.
But we're talking about political violence.
Yeah.
And to get your way like a 5-year-old, there's just not room for it. And if you can condone it or even see like, well, I kind of get what they were trying to do. Nope. Nope. Right. Then you miss the whole point.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So that's the first half of season 6.
There you go. Awesome. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. And it's something that I'm sure we're going to have to continue to unpack, because I'm sure there's going to be another scandal that's going to happen.
Yeah, we'll see after we come back after the new year, like,
yeah.
How much things have deteriorated.
Well, you know what? We'll be two doing people at that point.
If Jesus comes back before then it's been great, guys.
Like, yeah.
Good game.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, that's awesome. Well, very good. Well, thank you so much for listening to the episode. And I mean, I guess we'll be seeing you next year.
Yeah, see you next year. Yeah. And maybe we hit up like an Instagram Live or something like that.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I like that. And well, everyone, I hope you guys have a really safe,
holiday season.
Holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, all that kind of stuff.
Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ramadan.
Is that Ramadan in this? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Ramadan, I think, is in this season.
Yeah, cool. Nice. Happy holidays to everybody. And
oh, you didn't say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yeah, I know. I don't want to be. They'd be like, this is not a Christian podcast.
Say Christmas.
You didn't say Christmas. The war on Christmas.
Actually. And even worse, you said Merry Xmas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gosh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, all right. Very good. Well, hey, thanks so much for listening. And keep unfolding God's word each and every day. And we will see you next time on the podcast.
See you next year.
All right.
2023.
Here we go. All right, bye. Thank you for listening to Fold and Share Theology. You can follow Bruce on multiple social media platforms at bpags2, as well as Justin Mercier on Instagram at justinmercier13. Additionally, you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Fold and Share Theology. Until then, keep unfolding God's word each and every day.